Bocetos, una historia del hip hop de Puerto Rico.
Saludos, estás escuchando el episodio número 5 de Bocetos, una historia del hip hop de Puerto Rico. Yo soy tu pana Rafo y estoy conversando contigo acerca de la historia de Puerto Rico, pero de una manera diferente. Gracias por llegar a mi salón de clase, bienvenido. Óyeme, y antes de comenzar, déjame darle las gracias a la producción de Bocetos, quien levantó una página del proyecto en Facebook y junto a Escape Media le han ido dando un cariñito bien chévere, hermano. Estamos bajo el nombre de Bocetos, una historia del hip hop de Puerto Rico, así que dale para Facebook y síguenos por allá también. Óyeme, y cuando llegues, verifica el arte que hizo Escape Media y déjame saber qué piensas, porque para mí, tacho, le quedó cañón. Anyway, en el episodio pasado estuve conversando un ratito con Vivian Vázquez, pues me interesaba que tuvieras la oportunidad de conocer la experiencia de una joven puertorriqueña criada en el Bronx en los 70, casa de muchos puertorriqueños y la cuna del hip hop. La idea era que tuvieras una visión como que más amplia de la historia que te conté en el episodio 3. Al finalizar la entrevista con Vivian, me propuse saltar al 79 y hablarte de Rapper's Delight, el primer rap que sonó en la radio de Estados Unidos. De hecho, y así te lo dije, pero me había quedado como con una inquietud, con esta necesidad de seguir explorando un poquito más acerca de esa época antes del 79, y se lo dije a Vivian. Ella rápido me refirió a Joe Council, una figura bien importante en toda esta historia. Es que Joe fue este individuo que tomó esas primeras fotos que se conocen del hip hop, imágenes que le han dado la vuelta al mundo. Pero este individuo es mucho más. En Joe se funde la salsa, el hip hop y la puertorriqueñidad de una manera bien brutal, hermano. Así que, como también te había dicho que iba a trabajar esta historia bajo el concepto de nudos, ¿te acuerdas? Pues mira, déjame seguir por aquí, déjame seguir desatando esto que me parece bien interesante. Sin más, te presento al nieto de Evelina y al hijo de Lorraine y Joe Sr., Joey Kane, a.k.a. Joey Snaps, un body del Bronx. Que lo disfrutes.
La historia del hip hop en Puerto Rico, nadie la ha contado. Nobody has begun como let's say salsa. Although there's a problem with dates, you know, and we can get into that argument later on. Pero tú sabes que se dice que this began en agosto, Chira, with Fania, All Stars, en el 71, right? So the same thing goes for hip hop. Mira, en agosto del 73, this was born with Party Cool Herc and Cindy Campbell, this, that, and the other, ¿verdad? When you ask people about hip hop in Puerto Rico, ellos hacen, you know what, I don't know. And I'm like, so this need to be addressed. Wow. And they don't know. Wow. Not historians, people in the community, tú sabes, and nobody has taken the time to put this puzzle together. And try to make a narrative of it. So, the project began by, yo, ¿verdad? Una vez terminé mi tesis con la salsa, empiezo a investigar toda esta información, que it's not even on an archive, it's everywhere, tú sabes, in people's heads, memories, experiences, uno que otro graffiti que uno ve por ahí, yo le voy tomando fotos, some articles in the newspaper, pero todo está regado. So, it basically goes like this. I found so far that on a party, coincidentally,
I'm just waving at my granddaughter.
Okay, beautiful. No problem. En un party en Puerta de Tierra, 1985, there was this party. Habían par de New Yorkers rapping in English, Spanish, and so this and the other. Y entonces viene this little tiny kid from Puerta de Tierra, que he picks up the mic and he starts rapping in Spanish.
Wow.
Pero más allá que Spanish, this is why I'm proposing this, you know, I'm proposing that this is when it begins, porque más allá de rapear en español, he begins rapping about his experience growing up in Puerta de Tierra.
Oh, wow.
Which is hip hop, you know? Tú sabes, he's taking this experience y expresarlo through rapping, breaking, or graffiti, or whatever, you know? So, 1985, from then, entonces la música, I found old tapes, very old, man. Tú sabes que I tengo que hacer la cuestión digitalize them. Que you can get you get to hear the music. They were sampling LL Cool J, some Run DMC, and they were doing some basic scratching. Que uno dice, wow, estos chamaquitos sin saber inglés.
¿En qué parte? What part did I
Puerta de Tierra, San Juan.
San Juan, okay.
San Juan, Puerta de Tierra, it's, entonces, check the coincidence, man. Puerta de Tierra is a place similar in geography and everything to the South Bronx, meaning they had this history before, tú sabes, this is pretty close to...
Uh-huh. Between you and me, let's start a rumor that hip hop started in Puerto in La Perla.
Mira, mano, it's not far from the truth, porque de Puerta de Tierra, a walking distance, check this out, de Puerta de Tierra in San Juan to La Perla, 10-minute walk.
Wow.
So it is in La Perla. Wow. Pero that whole neighborhood, it's called Puerta de Tierra anyway. So
okay, didn't know that.
No, but we are all learning about this, tú sabes, porque nadie lo ha contado. So, from then on, 1985 to 1989, crews began to form.
Emerging pop.
Yeah, breakers, algunos rapeando, imitating, pero anyway, la cosa es que empieza a haber like a movement. From 1980...
That is phenomenal.
It is, man. 85 to 89. On 1989, check the coincidence or the parallel. 1989, we have our first Spanish rap played on a radio, and it's called "No a las Drogas." And when I hear that song, I can compare it easily to the message from esta gente. It's the same
Spirit
thing.
Yeah,
don't push me because I'm close to the edge. Cuando tú oyes esa canción, no a las drogas, es como diciéndote, mira, esto está bien malo, tengo que decirle no a las drogas. So it's almost the same experience, tú sabes. This little kid from the ghetto in Puerto Rico diciendo, esta mierda, whatever we have, este ELA, Estado Libre Asociado, whatever we have, this is not working for us, man. Tú sabes.
Wow.
And it's, y de ahí entonces empieza, pero this is 89, check it out. On 90, el verano, summer 1990, actually, Spanish reggae began coming from Panama. Okay. Ahí llega el general Nando Boone and all these right. cats que traen este boom, boom, mami, mami, and all this, you know. And then all of a sudden, kids, they were doing just hip-hop. The basics, tú sabes, breaking, again, scratching, right. graffiti and stuff, se fueron por ahí porque the industry saw the commercial aspect of this. Oye, las nenas con los pantaloncitos apretados, enseñando un poquito, yeah. you know, this, that, and the other. And then, chamaquito started doing reggae in Spanish, and from there, reggaeton. However, siempre hubo a group of people maintaining the culture.
Wow.
Graffiti, knowing the names, tú ves old graffitis de que si Public Enemy. Graffiti, de nenes que nunca han salido de Puerto Rico, writing South Bronx.
Wow.
They've never been out of San Juan, writing South Bronx, meaning that they have this knowledge. Porque es Puerto Rican history anyway, tú sabes.
True.
Escribiendo South Bronx, this, that, and the other, tú sabes. So, our project, Bocetos, what it's trying to do is that narrate this story. Porque reggaeton, we know. Reggaeton, right. their books, tú sabes, Raquel Zeta right. Rivera made a book. Right. Los cubren, they got Grammys. Tú sabes, right. everybody knows Daddy Yankee. Everybody right. knows right. Teo Calderón. Tú sabes, this is the story of the unknown that que se han mantenido parallel to reggaeton, siguieron. They've done shows, they've done music, han sacado música muy buena with good samples. They began sampling instead of sampling blues, jazz, or regular Afro-American music. Ellos empezaron a samplear from Danny Rivera, empezaron a samplear from Fania, started sampling from Caribbean roots from over here, you
right.
know?
Entonces, right.
all that and then some es lo que yo estoy tratando de plantear. However, check this out, because I see this on a bigger picture. What I'm trying to state is, back in the 40s, Muñoz Marín had this project que he pushed a lot of Puerto Ricans out of the island. He pushed them out, man, porque there's no doubt about it. Yo tengo la documentación. Although they didn't want to say that, el Partido Popular Democrático, no, they were pushing people, mira, toda esta gente está de más, son gente pobre, gente del campo, whatever, y los enviaron para Estados Unidos y breguen ustedes allá, which is your grandma's story and your mom's story.
And it is true, because my grandmother came in that wave.
Yeah.
In the 30s and 40s, you uh-huh. know what I mean? Uh-huh. To New York, because the streets were paved with gold.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And tú puedes hacer, you can do whatever you want, however you want. This, that, and the other. Y fue una mierda. It was bullshit.
Oh, it is. It's been bullshit.
It's bullshit.
Para la gente pobre, you know, it's been bullshit.
Yeah, it's been bullshit. But so, yeah, she was part of that wave that came as a very young girl to stay with an aunt of mine here, to wait to bring her other sisters, because my they're called Los Tres Hermanas.
Okay.
So my grandmother was Doctora Evelina Antonetti, mm-hmm. who is well documented, books, documentaries. Then there's her sister, middle sister, Lillian Lopez, my aunt, who was the first Puerto Rican librarian to run the entire library in New York City.
Oh,
la primera.
Wow.
Lillian Lopez. Y the youngest, my madrina, my godmother, also my titi, who's the matriarch of the family now, because she's the only one left, who just turned 87 the other day.
Wow,
she started an organization called AHA, Association of Hispanic Arts, who worked with Miriam Lopez, Miriam Colón, those people from the 60s and 70s. So there's a lot of, if you Google, there's a lot of history of my family when they first migrated over. And like my grandmother, who got her cojones, mm-hmm. was, you know, working with Jesús Colón over mm-hmm. here in New York City. And Vito Marcantonio Algo, Italiano, Italian, who started the labor movement and unionizing. And my grandmother was a volunteer as a teenager for him and got all of that. And just the rest is history. The rest is history.
Well, that's a beautiful thing, man. You see, because somehow, the fact is that once este political party pushed you guys, Puerto Ricans, afuera, they forgot about you.
Of course.
And they started somehow, other people, particularly intellectuals, y gente cerradita de mente, they began saying, these Puerto Ricans, they have become Americanized, tú sabes, se pusieron gringos, this and the other. And when you get to hear your stories, man, la historia de tu abuela, de tu tía, tú los ves allá, mano, making it happen through all the struggle y siendo más boricua que el boricua.
And never forgetting
that's right
where they came from.
That's right, man. Mira,
because let me tell you something. My grandmother, even though she gave her life for the people of the Bronx and New York City, she never forgot about the island.
That's right.
Never.
No.
And the struggle. And one of the first, and, you know, she was part of that independence movement, with any other, con Lolita Lebron and Rafael Hernandez and all the political prisoners. And one of the first, when they got pardoned by Jimmy Carter, One of the first trips, or one of the first persons that Lolita Lebron came to see was my grandmother in the Bronx.
Wow. Oh, wow.
Yo tengo fotos.
Ah, chacho, brutal.
Of my grandmother and Lolita Lebron,
you know, man.
In the Bronx.
Brutal.
Because because my grandmother never ever forgot about her beautiful island. Never.
That's what's up. Mira, mano, now that we're talking about your grandma, vamos, give us the story that, so people that will be listening, I know that she's been called the Hell Lady of the Bronx or the mother of the Puerto Rican community.
Either or.
That's right.
She embraced both of them.
Can you tell us where was she born and how
She was born in Salinas.
Okay, Salinas.
Salinas, Puerto Rico.
And how she got to the Bronx?
Back then, you know, it was on a boat. Wow. It was on a boat. And it was my, ¿cómo se dice? Tía Godró that was here that sent for her and went to school, saved up, they got enough money to bring the other sisters over. And, you know, she never forgot her experience in school where, you know, she couldn't communicate because she was born in the island.
Right.
Didn't know that much English when she came here. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? She was a fast learner, but she learned. But she never forgot that experience. Mm. And so in her upbringing, through working with Jesus Klong and those people that I just mentioned to you, one of the first things my grandmother is accredited with doing in New York City was bilingual education. Mm. The public schools in New York City had no bilingual education whatsoever.
Wow.
So if you look, if you do the research, my grandmother, you know, is credited with bringing bilingual education to the New York City public school system.
Wow, that's powerful.
And this is the early 60s, you know, mm-hmm. You don't speak English, go sit in the back of the class, you were a troublemaker. Mm-hmm. You were sent to what's called a 600 school, you know, a school for bad kids and this, that, and the other. And, you know, that was one of her learning experiences, and she changed it. She changed it. You know what I mean? So, you know, again, she came here by boat, like most people did back in the 30s and 40s. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And you know, just, you know, was raised, you know, and how would I say it without being offending? You know, the big joke about 10 Puerto Ricans living in one apartment, one bedroom. Mm-hmm. It was the truth. You know, that's how I was raised too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know.
Arrejuntado, decimos nosotros acá, ¿verdad?
Yeah.
Arrejuntado todo el mundo junto. Yeah, definitely.
That's it. Pero siempre, there was always food on the table.
Mm-hmm.
Always a roof on the head. We may have had to share our clothing, you know, hand me down stuff. Mm-hmm. Pero we always had shoes. You know what I mean? So, mm-hmm. you know, that was the experience for her. You know, she came over and then, you know, the rest of my that generation of my family came over. But my mother, mm-hmm. jumping forward to my mother was born here.
Okay.
And
what was your mother's name? So people listening.
Lorraine Montenegro.
Lorraine Montenegro.
So I'm Puerto Rican, Cuban, Italian.
Okay, there you go.
So from my mother's side, mm-hmm. I am Cuban and Puerto Ricano.
Okay.
On my father's side, Conzo is Italian. Mm-hmm. I'm Puerto Rican Italian.
Okay.
But my mother was an only child up until she was 14 years old.
Okay.
And her father, my grandfather, Binaldo Montenegro,
mm-hmm.
Was from Cuba.
Okay.
Who met my grandmother, Evelina Lopez, at mm-hmm. the time, because Antonetti is her married name.
Okay.
And then when my grandmother remarried to Donato Antonetti, also from Salinas, my aunt and uncle were born, Anita and Donnie. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the rest is history. My mother always tells a story that since she was an only child up until 14, that's why she had five kids, because she didn't want any of us to experience what she went through growing up, being an only child.
Mm.
So she had five kids, and she raised five kids by herself.
So what number are you between them?
I'm the oldest.
Oh, okay.
El primer dolor.
Tú eres junior, tú eres junior.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm the oldest of five brothers and sisters. My mother's aspirations were to be a dancer.
Oh, really?
She went to the High School of Performing Arts here in New York City.
Okay.
She actually was up for a part in West Side Story.
Really?
The musical. Yes.
Really? Wow, concho.
Right. So the story is when she became pregnant with me, I ended her dancing career.
Ah, caramba.
So that's the story.
Uh-huh,
you know?
Uh-huh.
But she met my father, Joe Conzo,
mm-hmm.
who was a struggling musician,
mm.
like anybody else. You know what I mean? He went into the service, into the army, did a couple years. And like a lot of Hispanics and people of color back then had drug problems.
Mm.
And my mother divorced him after a couple years, after right. my brother and I was born.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, continued her career. She went back to school.
Okay.
And, you know, got her master's degree.
Whoa, really?
Wow. And got her master's degree. And then when my grandmother passed away in 1984, she took over United Bronx Parents, the organization that my grandmother founded in 1967, 68, por ahí, maybe earlier.
Wow.
And it started, the organization started out as a Parents Teachers Association,
okay.
a PTA, como se dice.
And
again, one of the things my grandmother tried to change in the educational field was, primero, you're going to have to start some sort of bilingual education because you have an abundance of Hispanic people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sí,
in the public schools,
mm-hmm.
in the schools that don't have no idea of what's going on.
Mm.
And back then, you know, the public schools would just pass you on to the next grade without you ever really learning anything.
Oh, wow. See.
And it was sad. It was
mm-hmm.
sad. So my grandmother's is known for starting bilingual education. There's a famous picture of her dumping garbage on the steps of City Hall because of the food that we ate, the kids ate during school days, wasn't nutritional enough.
Right.
My grandmother also started what's called the summer lunch program because her thinking was for 8 to 9 months that kids were in school.
Mm-hmm. Comían más o menos bien.
They ate.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But then in the summertime, mm-hmm.
what happens?
Exacto.
So she started the summer lunch program where for the first year, I think it started in 73, 74,
okay.
where she got enough money together from sponsors and the government, and she delivered a healthy meal to the entire New York City.
Wow, man, wow, qué brutal, yo.
For kids.
Yo.
But it was so difficult
mm-hmm.
that she organized other organizations to come on board and said, mira, you take care of Brooklyn, you take care of Queens,
claro.
You know,
mm-hmm,
you take
mm-hmm.
care of Harlem, I'll take care of the Bronx. So it grew. It grew. And then next thing you know, after a couple of years, besides the lunch program, it became the breakfast program. So, so for the entire summer months, you got breakfast and lunch.
And lunch, beautiful. Listen, and you're telling me this, and I'm picturing that she was estaba coincidiendo, like she was doing this at the same time that the young lords were helping out as well in the South Bronx. ¿Tú sabes? Porque es que a ustedes los tiraron allá a morirse, mano.
The young lords, Richie Perez, may he rest in peace, Panama, and all those people, you know, they came to United Bronx Parents, to my grandmother's offices, to use their mimeograph machines to make up the flyers for, ¿cómo se dice? Consejo. From my grandmother.
Wow.
You know, so she worked behind the scenes with the young lords, you know, con Felipe, Luciano, con Juan Gonzalez, and all those people. These are people that I used to call tío growing up because I used to see them every day.
Wow, you know? What a beautiful experience, man.
And Lincoln Hospital, they took over Lincoln Hospital, which is one of the biggest hospitals in the Bronx at that time. They took it over with the blessings of my grandmother. You know, I was with a guy today named Chino Familia, and he was one of the young kids that hung up the flag on the Statue of Liberty when the young lords took over the Statue of Liberty. And so we were talking about that story today. You know what I mean? So, you know, my grandmother played a real important role in a lot of, in the basic human necessities, basic human rights for the people in the Bronx and of New York City and wherever.
Wow, beautiful, man. Long live Evelina, man.
Evelina presente.
Yeah, definitely, mano. Wow, that's beautiful. Me estabas hablando de lo de when the young lords took over the hospital. Last year, I think it was, mi mamá vive in New Jersey, and I went to visit her because she suffered an accident, and I was taking care of her. And Miguel Luciano had this proyecto throughout el barrio, mapping the barrio, and you had to see all the pictures that were taken back then, you know? Entonces hay una que llama mucho la atención, which is this one, that they were pushing an ambulance out of the hospital, pero era para eso mismo, because they took that ambulance and filled it up with todo lo que se necesitaba, medicina, etc. And they took it to the barrio. It's como que you're not going to help us. We're going to help out.
So, you know, they're credited with doing x-rays out in the streets for tuberculosis, TB, for starting the acupuncture programs instead of methadone for addicts, alternative treatments for addicts. And, you know, again, you know, these are guys that, you know, that I still look up to. I mean, you know, Felipe is still around, Juan Gonzalez is still around, you know, Panama, you know, is back on the island living there, but, you know, we hook, you know, stay in touch every once in a while, and it is our history. Nobody can take that away.
Beautiful.
You know, our history.
Yeah, I'm glad.
And, you know, again, right. I'm fortunate enough that I was raised in a family where you had to know your history of where you come from.
Definitely.
You had to. You know what I mean? It's just like in my photography, you know, I'm known as this photographer, that photographer, but I know the history of other photographers because I love the art form so much that I know who, you know, guess you'll get who this is and that is, you know what I mean? I mean, even Pablo Picasso was a photographer. Yeah, you know, those famous, you know, light drawings he did, you know, and, you know, you have to know your roots to love something. You have to know your roots.
And again, man, I'm glad you're bringing this up the story of grandmother, young lords, and all them, these names as well. Porque, again, the official history, when they teach Puerto Rican history aquí en la isla, they say this. Se fueron, and we continue about talking about whatever happened here, y nos olvidamos de todos ustedes allá.
But and I always, it's so unfair. It is unfair.
And check this out, porque lo que yo veo es, also, it's like they dropped you guys over there, forgot about you, y entonces when you guys narrate your stories, what you get to see is la historia de la brega. Es como que they dropped us here, pero no nos tiramos a morir. We started doing something, tú sabes, pues mira, hace falta medicina, pam, hace falta bilingual education, pam, hace falta mejor recogido de basura, pam, and you guys started doing it without knowing English back then, porque tú estás hablando como dice de tu abuela, you know what I'm saying, es como que sin saber mucho, mira, I'm gonna do this, man, tú sabes, right. Y eso es parte de lo que I'm trying to bring with this project, because we are all Puerto Ricans, tú sabes. No hay, para mí, conceptually, no hay de aquí y de allá. No. Todos somos boricua, tú sabes. Okay. Agarrados de una misma situación que fue, que nos soltaron allí y estamos doing what we can do best, como tú estás diciendo, familia.
You have to ask the question too, is why, two questions, why did they push them out?
Mm-hmm.
And why did they leave? Because just like any other, and I don't want to bottle us into the immigrant bubble, mm-hmm. but we migrated from Puerto Rico to the United States,
uh-huh. of course,
looking for mm-hmm. the better life. But yet, what we did here also included over there, or at least there was an attempt to, you know what I mean? There was an attempt to, I made $20 this week. Let me send $10 back mm-hmm, to the mm-hmm. island
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
so they can survive. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, I'm doing this here. Let's see if we can do it over there. You know what I mean? I was part of, you know, I was fortunate enough to be part of an organization as a teenager called Aspida, which started here. And one of the things that they did was bring Puerto Rican kids from the United States that had never been to the island.
Wow.
And bring them to the island,
okay.
which was beautiful, which mm-hmm. was beautiful. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, again, you know, yes, we were pushed out, that there was a whole generation that was pushed out, but, you know, they tried to do their best.
Mm-hmm. And they did, of course,
and
man.
They did, and they never forgot about where they came from. Listen,
Y seguiremos, man. Listen, porque así es. Entonces, I'm glad you also mentioned los chavitos, porque se enviaban chavitos, but we also contributed, meaning New Yorkers, we also contributed with culture, meaning cuando salió la salsa, los boricuas de aquí estaban bailando Rey Barreto, you know what I'm saying? Estaban bailando Eddie Palmieri, so we gave them that as well, porque no nos olvidamos. ¿Qué hizo Eddie Palmieri once he had established himself después de La Perfecta? He came to the University of Puerto Rico.
Exactly.
He first started in Sing Sing, después vino para acá para la universidad y tocando, y después con los presos acá, tú sabes.
And that was when he was at his
the peak,
top.
Man. Yeah,
the
definitely.
Peak.
Yeah,
the
man.
The peak. Yeah.
And always, and the same thing goes for hip hop. Tú sabes, what I'm trying to establish, and eventually I'll get there, I'm just staying little by little in the Bronx todavía, porque people need to understand this whole situation, es que eventually, even hip-hop, porque it's the same Puerto Ricans that got to the Bronx and elsewhere, porque llegaron a Chicago and llegaron a New Jersey, pero this is the story of hip-hop, which started in the Bronx. Pues estos mismos boricuas que they llegaron al Bronx, que they co-created with African Americans hip hop, whether they want to accept it or not, that's another issue.
Right.
But we were there from the beginning. esos mismos boricuas eventually trajeron esa cultura para acá.
Right.
And that's the show that I'm telling you, the 1985 con Vigo Sigue started. Ah, yo aquí de Puerto Tierra, que la cosa está
that
mala.
Is so dope.
Tú sabes,
that and, is so dope.
And it continues. So sería bien, bien chévere, eventually, like I'm trying to do, es como enseñarle al puertorriqueño de aquí que eso no fue American music that we adopted. No. This is Puerto Rican music as well. Because
that we were part of.
From the beginning. Esto no es algo que viene de afuera. Sigue siendo nuestro.
No.
And also, I would love black people, our brothers, black people from the States, para que entiendan cómo fue que once it got out from New York y llegó a Puerto Rico, what we did of it. Porque, mano, we got some
great... And some of them do.
No, of course.
I was telling you this the other day when I spoke on the phone that the narrative is coming up again that we were invited to this thing called hip hop. I'm like, invited? Muchacho. my mother threw parties that lasted a weekend, you know, 2 days long, please. You know, mm-hmm. I told you about Tito Puente playing on the Sugar Hill Gang's first album.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to go Google it and look at it. Special appearance by Tito Puente, on Sugar Hill Gang. Unheard
mm-hmm.
of.
Mm-hmm. That's what's up.
Jimmy Delgado, getting a gold record for mm-hmm. the first certified gold hip hop record by Curtis Blow.
That's right.
We were either side by side
mm-hmm.
or in front. You know what I mean? So that's a mierda.
Yeah. Beautiful, man. Listen, so we spoke a little bit about your abuela, de tu mamá también. So talk to me some about your father, Joe Canso Sr., people that they don't understand. He was a longtime confidant and biographer de Tito Puente, when I first heard about this, I'm like, wow, how did this come about? One, that's my first question. And also, ¿cómo fue tu experiencia? Because, I mean, you must have grown around Tito Puente, right? Johnny Pacheco, maybe you saw Barreto.
All of them.
Oh,
all
you
of them.
See, man, that's a beautiful thing.
All
so,
of them.
Again, your dad, man. Uh-huh.
My dad, Joe Canso Sr.,
mm-hmm.
was a struggling musician, just like, any musician. And he got to meet Tito Puente back in the early 70s, I think around 1970, 72, 73, por ahí.
Okay.
And they just hit it off. And the next thing you know, they're hanging out together, drinking, haciendo base, whatever.
Sí. Mm-hmm.
And I think my dad's first business thing with Tito was a liner notes for the Many Moods of Tito Puente, that album.
Okay.
I think that was my dad's first official business linking with Tito. He wrote the liner notes for that album called The Many Moods of Tito Puente.
Mm-hmm.
And he wrote the liner notes from that.
Beautiful.
And from then it just blossomed into a friendship, brotherhood that lasted up until Tito passed away in 2000. I mean, they were so close that, my dad traveled the world with Tito.
Wow.
You know what I mean? Produced, wrote, promote, protected Tito.
Wow.
And
¿Qué instrumento tocaba tu papá? What instrument did he?
The congas.
Wow. Congas. Okay, nice.
And so my involvement was that when I wasn't hanging out with the guys that I went to school with, the Cold Crush Brothers, because they're the ones that introduced me to this thing that we call hip hop today.
Okay.
When I
hope people got what you just said, man. You just said, let me repeat this.
Go ahead.
Your friends, you used to hang out, the people that introduced you to this world of hip hop were the Cold Crush Brothers. Is that what you said? Jesus Christ. Continue.
I went to school with Eazy-A, Adrian Harris, and Tony Tone.
Oh, look at that.
The three of us went to South Bronx High School. Mm-hmm. And that was in 77. Mm-hmm. Okay. Disco was big.
Mm-hmm.
That was a thing. You know, salsa was at its peak.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this, that, and the other. My father had just came back into my life because he had disappeared for a couple of years dealing with his drug addiction and this, that, and the other. So he came back into my life. And so when I wasn't with my classmates,
mm-hmm.
taking, because it wasn't called hip hop then.
No, of course not.
Hip hop came, the word hip hop came in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Later on.
Mm-hmm.
It was the jam. The next jam, the next party. Okay. When I wasn't with them, my dad was trying to be the father that he wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd go with him to see Tito rehearse.
Wow.
At the studio to see Tito play and this, that, and the other. And I got to be honest with you. You know, I didn't call Tito. I called him Tio.
Stop.
Celia wasn't Celia to me. She was Titi.
Titi, wow. Yo.
Just like Ray Barreto, just like Hector, Ese Loco Willie Colon, you know, the rest of them. They were either first name basis or Titi or Tio, because that's how close my father was to these giants.
Wow, that's
and it was all through Tito. And today, my father is the foremost historian on Latin music and Tito Puente's life. And, you know, it's truly a blessing because he's out there, you know, he's teaching classes. He's retired. He's a retired social worker from the city. And he teaches at All Stars Community.
Your father's still alive?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Hold on one second.
Sure, no problem.
He just finished writing his book. His book, Mambo Diablo.
I've seen that. Wow, that was your dad.
And you know, this is the other one, and it was just translated into Spanish. So this is his 40 plus years with Tito Puente. You know, and he's a firm believer. He's 77.
Okay.
He's a firm believer in keeping the history alive. So he teaches at Hostos Community College.
Beautiful.
One of the first Spanish colleges here in the city.
Mm-hmm.
And he teaches, as a matter of fact, his classes go online in the next 2 weeks. I'll send you the link so you can log in.
Oh, man.
And check it out. Yeah.
And
he's a firm believer, you know, you can't go forward unless you know where you came from.
That's right, man. That's right. That's right.
You can't.
I met these cats over there when I used to live in New York, que me enseñaron la frase que decía, siembra la memoria para que no crezca el olvido. Like, meaning, always remember where you're coming from para que no te olvide, mano. Tú sabes.
Yes, that is so true.
Tú sabes, siempre, 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 siempre. Porque, I mean, come on now. That's our identity, you know?
Yeah. So, you know, I wear many hats when it comes to my photography, because I was that 14, 15-year-old kid that just fell in love with photography. And, you know, you can see.
Yeah, by the way, let me tell you something. Tú no has cambiado en nada, brother. You haven't aged a bit. When I first saw those pictures, I'm like, pero yo es igualito, mano. Falta el afro.
Falta el afro. And I'm trying to bring it back. I want everybody to bring back the afro. But,
Bro,
you know.
So, now we're there. How do you, ¿Cómo tú llegas a la fotografía? What made you take your camera? And hold on, again, for people listening that might not know about this beautiful human being that I'm having this chat with right now.
In an
article published on 2005 by the New York Times, a reporter, David Gonzalez, talked about you as the man who took hip-hop's baby pictures. But my question is, what made you take a camera? Tú sabes, tú
okay. Dices, mira, por aquí, so, mm-hmm. So, I mean, for the listeners, mm-hmm. for you to see, I was that chubby little kid with a big Angela Davis afro. I wasn't good rapping. Right. I wasn't a good athlete. You know, I wasn't a DJ. And I didn't have the gift of gab.
Mm.
My stepfather, Michael Caine, who my mother married,
mm-hmm.
Was an amateur family photographer.
Okay.
Who introduced me to photography. Mm. And I have a report card from 1972 from, I think, the second grade, third okay. grade. And it says in the report card that Joey is excelling in photography. And here I, you know, that made me 11, 12 years old. And wow. I just gravitated towards photography. And the fact is that you know, that I could capture a moment, run home. No, before that, capture a moment, send in a roll of film
mm-hmm.
to the store, and 2 days later, pick it up and see the pictures was just so beautiful to me. And it just became a passion where I became the junior high school photographer, the high school photographer, and the rest is history. Again, when I was hanging out with my classmates
uh-huh.
who put together the Kolkush Brothers, where Charlie Chase, who is the first Puerto Rican DJ of hip hop.
That's right.
You know,
right.
Mm-hmm. When I got to meet them, you know, with my classmates, you know, I was taking pictures. And then when I wasn't with them, I was with my dad with my camera taking pictures again. Of Tio and Titi, of Celia, Tio, Hector, you know, Lo Palmeri brother, Charlie, Eddie, you know, wow. Johnny Pacheco, you name it. Hmm. You name them, I got them. Joe Keanu, you know, all of them. And then when I wasn't hanging out with my dad, I was with my grandmother,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Who was doing demonstrations out in the streets against Paul Newman in the movie Fort Apache, the Bronx, or, uh-huh. you know, demonstrating against this or demonstrating against that, because, you know, during that time, you know, the 70s and 80s, you know, the Bronx was burning at right. the time. Mm-hmm. A lot of stuff was going on. And, you know, so my archives, you know, I love the fact that I'm known as a hip hop photographer, but it's so much more.
It is. Now that you mention it, I always thought about your art in this way, which is what I'm trying to say is that what I find most interesting about your art is that it is a testimony of this generation that refused to be erased from history. You know what I mean? Tú sabes, porque tus fotos se han usado para documentales, not only for hip hop, tú sabes. They're there porque tú you had this eye, this vision, tú sabes, y estabas tomando fotografía todo lo que da. You were
of everything, of my surrounding,
like
of my
right.
surrounding, of my daily walks.
Mm-hmm.
Just you know, that's how much I love photography, and thank God for my mother, who believed in me and believed in my passion and supported me, where she allowed me to build a dark room. Where I can develop my own film.
Okay, beautiful.
And print up my own photos in our house.
Wow,
you know? And, you know, and then again, you know, because of who I was, Joe Conzo Sr.,
mm-hmm.
Eddie Palmieri didn't mind me taking pictures of him. Larry Harlow didn't mind me. I say el hijo de Joe, Nalo Quieto.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
I can go to Madison Square Garden, Ralph Mercado's, you know, big salsa concert. Oh, I say, hijo de Joe, déjalo quieto. Let him do what he wants. You know what I mean? And, nice. You know, I just had that type of access.
Y tomaste una buena oportunidad, I mean, because pudiste haberlo hecho, tú sabes. And instead you did it. Tell me something, Joe. It is my understanding that, is it Cornell University that decided to, ¿cómo se dice eso? Guardar your pictures, right?
So I met in 2002 to 2003. I met a Swedish man, record collector, mm-hmm. who was looking. You know, I was introduced to this Swedish guy named Johan Kugelberg, mm. who today we are the best of friends. You know, over almost a 20-year friendship, who was collecting rare hip-hop albums and stuff like that. And he asked Grandmaster Kaz one day from the Cold Crush Brothers, did anybody take pictures back then? And Kaz goes, we had our own photographer, you know, Joey Kane, Joe Conzo. Can I meet him? So I got an email, a phone call, saying there's this guy that wants to meet you, you know. And I had just got back into the scene of photography because I had put my camera down for a lot of years because I was dealing with drug abuse. You know, I was homeless at one time, sold all my camera equipment, was living in the streets and this, that, and the other. And, you know, I had got myself together and, you know, started working for the city and got myself clean. And today, thank God, you know, I've been clean 29 years, clean and sober. And my mother, who tried her best to save me from drug addiction, mm-hmm. you know, saved all my photography, my negatives.
Oh, wow. God bless her soul, man.
So when I met this guy named Johan Kugelberg, he was like, you know, can I see some of your pictures? So I, you know, went downtown, brought him these two boxes of negatives and pictures, and he was just blown away. Blown away. Oh, these pictures need to be in a book. They need to be in an exhibition. They need this and need that. And I was like, "De la mierda, are you going to buy anything?"
Right?
He didn't buy nothing. But he said, listen, we're going to do an exhibition. We're going to do a book. We're going to do this. We're going to do that, this, that, and the other. And we did an exhibition.
Wow.
We did a book. Wow. And because of that book, Born in the Bronx, I've been all over the world. Wow. That exhibition, after it traveled the world, needed a home.
Mm-hmm.
And we approached all these universities, all these museums. Nobody wanted it. Ah, that's hip hop. Ah, we've been there, done that, this, that, and the other. And it was Cornell University. An Ivy League college, one of the mm-hmm. top 10 colleges mm-hmm. in the country.
That's right.
Says, we'll take it.
Wow.
We'll take it. We'll digitize. Mm. We'll put it online so people could learn about, you know, Joe Conzo and what he took. And we'll write you a check also.
Oh, beautiful. My man.
So the story goes is that I deposited over 10,000 of my negatives at Cornell wow. University.
Coño, yo, eso es un montón.
They sit on the same shelf as the Gettysburg Address. They no. sit on the same shelf of Dr. Martin Luther King's writings, the civil oh. rights movements, oh. this, that, and the other.
Wow.
That to really? Me is just mind blowing. You know, it's just
for real.
You know, my negatives, my photography will live on for hundreds and hundreds of years.
Wow, man, I'm beautiful.
God and God. One of the reasons why I did that was, A, because, God forbid, there was ever a fire,
oh, that's
a flood.
Right.
This, that, and you hear these stories about you know, John Coltrane's master tapes found in a dumpster, or Sugar Hill recording studios and all the master tapes burnt in a fire. You hear all these horrible stories. So I didn't want that to happen. And one of the things, you know, that I insisted on was that, okay, you're going to take this stuff, my life, a part of me, okay? I retain ownership for the next 50 years.
Oh, wow, nice.
So when I pass away, my family still owns the rights to my images. Beautiful. You're going to digitize them so people can do research, and you can go online right now and look at close to 8,000 images that I took of Tito, of hip hop, of, you know, the movement, family, you know, lo que sea. Wow. And they said yes.
Brutal, mano, that's a blessing.
And right now they have the biggest hip hop collection in the world. So I opened up the doors for Crazy Legs and Ernie Panicoli and all these other photographers and artists, you know, Lee Quiñones and all these other people to think about or have their archives placed there. Because, mira, Javo, I can't take it with me.
No.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely.
And that's where it should be.
Exactly, yeah, man. Tú sabes, I know I'm just a person, but somehow this is the conscious that I want to bring to the island con the hip hop. Tú sabes, porque again, no one has a place that they can go to para ver la foto de, let's say we had a group here named Nombre Syndicate, el Sindicato de la Nomelaza.
Okay.
And they were big, tú sabes. Kind of like think about the Wu-Tang Clan. So they were somehow the Puerto Rican Wu-Tang Clan. They were like over 50 guys rapping y metiéndole bien chévere, qué sé yo qué. Where are the pictures? Tú sabes. Wow. If I ever get to them, con el permiso de ellos, I want to start making an archive para hacer todo esto que
we, you have to.
Your mom's vision, primero que las preservó, and then you decided to retomar tu vida and so on. Y después vino la universidad y te dio esta oportunidad. We need to do that porque estamos hablando desde un principio de lo mismo. We need to remember where we come from. Tú sabes, ¿no? Tú sabes. It's very important, mano. Tú sabes, eso está brutal. To have a place that you can go to y chequear, decirle a tu nene, oye, mira, este era fulano.
And mira, Cornell University, I'm going to be honest with you. I get flack all the time. Why Cornell? Why 4 hours away?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, because Fordham Road, Fordham University, the Bronx Museum, and all these other places didn't want it.
Exactly.
They didn't want it.
Que tú quieres que
or they wanted him, but it wasn't under my conditions. It was under their conditions. And I'm like, no. It's a meal. And if I'm going to... Exactly. And this is what I want. Mm-hmm. I don't want... I mean, Hunter College here in New York, part of it is named after my grandmother, Evelina Antonetti, you know. And which is beautiful. It's wonderful. And it's a great honor and this, that, and the other. And their archives is phenomenal. And I've donated some of my work there. But they have a lot of my grandmother's papers and stuff like that. But it's not available.
Mm-hmm.
You have to call them up. They got to pull it out of the basement. I'm like, no. If I'm going to give you this, I want you to do A, B, and C.
That's right. Sí, porque, I mean, why are we... Listen, I'm going to be honest as well with
if
you.
If it's going to sit in a box in a basement,
it's not doing anything.
Here, it could have stayed here in my house.
Exactly.
You know what
exactly,
I mean?
Exactly. To see, yeah, definitely.
I know it costs money, it costs this, and this, that, and the other. But you know what? If you believe in it, like I believe in it, then you'll find the money.
To
put it together and make it available to the people to see.
Porque para cualquier otra porquería salen chavos siempre. You see what I'm saying? Tú sabes, and then for this, I mean, come on, if you can pull that for whatever, for a mall, yeah. for some high building para que los pobres yeah. no puedan vivir ahí, whatever, pues, yeah. tú sabes, yeah. puedes hacer lo mismo por esto, you know.
Exactly. Right?
Listen, so before we wrap this up, because it's been great, man, you're, chacho, esto ha sido para mí tremendo. Let's talk a bit about hip-hop, especially the hip-hop that you grew up with, meaning, you know, the story goes like this. It started in 73.
August 11th, 1973, by Cindy Campbell, Baptist School at 1520 Cedric Avenue here in the Bronx.
Right. Beautiful, beautiful.
The west side of the Bronx. And, you know, that's the way the story goes. I was not there. Mm-hmm. That would have only made me 10 years old because I was born in 1963. Okay. I have not met anybody that was there.
Okay.
But, you know, when I hear people like Kaz and Afrika Bambaataa and all these pioneers speak about it, then I speak about it too. I know Kool Herc. He speaks about it. I know Cindy. She speaks about it. So, you know, God bless. Right, and that is considered the birth of hip-hop.
In my podcast, I have an episode that I say that although dates, esta fecha, they can be a little problematic. I don't have a problem with the date because I have been taught to think about who is the one writing the history. And when it comes to hip-hop, it's minorities, it's Black and Puerto Ricans writing the history. But mira, they need to have a history. So yo no me voy a meter con la fecha.
Sí.
What I would love to explore a bit is that right after that, ¿cómo era ese ambiente? Let's say from 74 to 78 prior to Rapper's Delight, the cliques, que they were coming up, the rappers that were coming up. I mean,
Again,
you can tell me, of course, tú sabes.
I can only speak on my experience. And my experience was that, you know, growing up in the Bronx in the early 70s, there was music everywhere. Yeah. Everywhere. Mm-hmm. Every corner. Some salsero, conguero, whatever, you know, just everywhere. There was music everywhere, okay? Whether you were Black, Puerto Rican, lo que sea.
Mm-hmm.
Music, a lot of gangs.
Mm-hmm. True. A
lot of gangs. You know, a lot of drugs.
Black Spades,
Ghetto Brothers, Benji Melendez, may you rest in peace, and you know all that. But more of a family unity.
Mm.
Because we knew, everybody knew each other wherever you lived. Y si fue una noche que no hay suficiente comida, you know you can go next door and knock on Doña Pancha's door.
And Pancha has some food for you. Yeah, that's right.
Exactly, and vice versa. And that's how, you know, I just remember it being more family togetherness then. Okay. And as I grew older, you know, I grew up on American music because that's all there was. For us to listen to, you know. So I grew up listening to the Beatles and you know, all those, you know, Elton John and you know, all of those. I grew up listening to Tito and Celia and, you know, Miguelito Valdez and, you know, all those, you know, all that because it was played in my house by my parents, you know. And, you know, so it was just a different environment while the world was a little bit crazy at the time, you know. And for me, you know, again, it was, I was into disco. I was just old enough to get into the, or sneak into the clubs, you know, 16, 17 years old. And it was just one Friday night that I was invited to a club up here in the North Bronx called the Tea Connection by my classmates, Tony Tone and AD. And they were putting this group together called the Cold Crush. And they invited me to come take pictures because I was the school photographer.
Right.
And I said, vamos, let's go. And the way I tell people is that I was kidnapped into this culture called hip hop.
Wow, nice, man.
I was kidnapped because when I saw un Puerto Riqueño, Carlos Mendez, aka Charlie Chase, play the music that I grew up on, but play it differently.
Right.
Play not the whole song, but bits and pieces of it, and see people dance, and then to see four black guys, two of them my schoolmates, on a mic, talk about, you know, what's going on in the streets or what's going on in school and this, that, and the other, I was blown away.
Wow.
Blown away. And next thing you know, you see two turntables in the park that the same gongueros were playing at. Now you see a Puerto Rican DJ out there with these speakers, turntables plugged into the lamppost playing music.
Beautiful, man. Beautiful, beautiful.
And it just sprang up in all these different areas in the Bronx. And next thing you know, I'm hanging out. I'm going to take pictures. And, you know, being part of the Cold Crush Brothers, they were so far ahead of the time because they used to take my photographs and put them on the flyers.
Oh, really?
And hand out the flyers.
Pa promoción. Wow, qué locura.
Because you weren't on the radio at the time. There was no internet. There was no social media. There was nothing. So what you did was you broke into your high school, you know, I forgot what it was called, printer room, and you print up all the flyers.
Wow.
There was no Xerox machine. There was no button where you can make it. You had to get the ink and the paper and manually make the flyers, and then you hand them out. That was your self-promotion. And then tú tenías un puertorriqueño que se llama Tape Master, Elvis Moreno, who would plug his cassette deck into the amplification of the jams and make these cassettes, recordings of all the jams. So, you know, we had a huge role in preserving and creating this culture.
That's right.
You know, and the next thing you know, we're traveling around like rock stars. You know, 81, 82, I think was the first trip, Wild Style tour, because the movie Wild Styles came out in 82. Then they went to Japan. Wow. And, you know, it went from the Bronx, went downtown, then went across the seas.
Mira, yo, and while this was happening, I know Rocksteady Crew was forming.
Right.
Did you meet Crazy Legs back then, or you met him after?
So I'm about 5 years older than Crazy Legs.
Okay.
So even though I have a few pictures of Crazy Legs in some of my photographs, He was part of the young kids.
See.
But his favorite group was the Cold Crush Brothers, and that's why I used to see him all the time.
Okay, look at that.
And, you know, so I knew who he was. He knew who I was, but we were just, you know, a couple years different. So we hung out in different crowds. And it wasn't until we were adults that we really
bonded
and started traveling the world together. As a matter of fact, it was Crazy Legs and I. We were together. We were in Holland together when Hurricane Maria hit. And when we just started going crazy, and I couldn't get in touch with my mother, and he couldn't get in touch with his family, and he started making phone calls and put together his Puerto Rock Steady thing and raised so much money with Red Bull and so many. I think they raised over $300,000.
Wow, man. Oh, wow.
To help people in Puerto Rico with clean water and solar energy. And, you know, Crazy Legs is like a brother to me, you know, during we've become so close that, you know, I'll tell you a quick story. Our parents, I didn't know this. My father, and I don't mean this in a bad way, my father es mujeriego. Como se dice, mujeriego. He's been married 5 times.
Oh.
He's been married 5 times.
Vaya, vaya.
So the story goes is that my father used to hang out with Crazy Legs' mother back in the days.
No.
So the story we have between us is, hey, coño, we could have been brothers.
Right? Te imaginas, qué locura, wow.
But we're so close. We're so close. And I'm so grateful for the relationship that I have with Crazy Legs. He's been there through so much of my trials and tribulations that I owe him a debt of gratitude and vice versa. You know what I mean? Because, I got him involved with Cornell, and his son just graduated from Cornell last year. So we are really, really close, and we do a lot of things together. But, getting back to hip hop, it was just an innocent time of, the next Friday, the next Saturday.
Right.
What am I going to wear? I need to, save up a few dollars so I can get some film to take pictures. I need to have that fresh pair of sneakers, that fresh pair of jeans, that Latiga, shirt. I need to make sure my afro is being
tight. Nice.
And, as the Cold Crush Brothers became more and more popular, I'm like, I'm with them. Never paid to get into any jams, never this, that, and the other. And through the Cold Crush Brothers, I got to meet and develop relationships with Afrika Bambaataa, Kool Herc, The Treacherous Three, The Fearless Four, all the founding fathers and sisters and founding members of the culture, hip hop. And to this day, 40, almost 50 years later, we're still friends.
Actually.
47, we're still friends. I was with Grandmaster Caz today, Whip-a-Whip from the Fantastic Romantic, another Puerto Rican MC.
Wow.
With him today. I was with Red Alert today. I was with so many people.
Brutal,
so,
brutal.
We're all still good friends. You know what I mean?
So,
and I had no idea. Let me just say this. I had no idea that what I love so much back then would become so big today. I had no idea that hip hop would become the number one genre of music, because we have surpassed.
No, of course.
It's rock really and good. Roll, country, yeah. This, that, and yes. The other. We have dominated.
Mm-hmm,
and, so when we talk about hip hop, I talk about all the elements.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I don't care too much for the musical part of it, the rap part of it, because I'm not into the rap music today. Maybe a little Common, right. Most Def and this and the other, but where it has gone, and that's okay.
Right. See, yeah, I feel you.
Post Malone and this, that, and the other. They say that's hip hop. Okay.
I don't. Whatever you say.
Whatever you say.
See. It has a lot to do with the commercial aspect of it, and of course, you know about that. Tú sabes este asunto de que the industry decontextualize this culture y usa lo que le interesa, which is the body, which is the clothing, which is el fronte and stupid. This is me on my personal opinion, right? Stupid lyrics to make the message go through. Y lo que es importante de esto, the essence of it, which is again community, which is again el contexto, the context of it, que sigue siendo una música de gente que you weren't
for the people and by the people.
Yes, and it was people that they were not supposed to survive, man. Porque te digo, nos tiraron a la mierda, como tú estás diciendo. And out of that, we made something. Not only community politically y nos hemos defendido this, that, and the other. We made music to celebrate each other porque nadie nos está celebrando.
Well, you know, I'll quote Grandmaster Caz. Hip-hop didn't invent anything. Hip-hop reinvented everything.
Beautiful.
The way we dress, the way, you know, I'm 57 years old. I'm still wearing sneakers and jeans and, you know, that's because of who I am. Now, I could put on a suit and hang with mayors and governors and this, that, and the other, like I've done in my career with the fire department, because I was the vice president of my union up until I retired. So I could put on a suit and tie just as good as the next person and talk the same lingo. But I prefer, you know.
That's not, it's not that it's not you. This is more, tú sabes, yo te entiendo. I understand.
Yeah.
Definitely. Well, listen, Joe, it's been great, man, but I don't want to take much more of your time. Then again, God bless your soul. I'm extremely happy for you.
Igualmente.
De que estás ahí cancer-free and luchando todos los días to make yourself busy. Y yo sé, man.
Thank you. And you keep doing what you're doing and trying to tell the narrative that needs to be told and needs to be documented, because it has to be done. It has to be done. And I'm going to loop you into the conversation that Legs and I are trying to keep going about Latinos and hip hop. And like I told you, we do these Zoom calls every once in a while. And the next one we do, I'm going to loop you into it, because Legs would be blown away to hear that story about you and finding out in 1985, this recording and this, that, and the other, because he could probably add to that narrative. You know what I mean?
Definitely. Yeah, no, of course.
You know, his first time, you know, he was born in New York City. He was born in the Bronx. But, you know, his first time going to the island as a Rocksteady Crew member, you know what I mean? And what he saw or what he did and this, that, and the other. So he could probably help you with that narrative. And, you know, I see this as a continuing.
That's what it is, man. That's what it is.
A continuation.
This is what I bring into the table, tú sabes, to the larger or the bigger hip hop history. I'm just trying to tell Puerto Rican hip hop de acá de la isla is just a continuation of whatever you did, guys. Tú sabes, porque it's our history as well. You'll see, man. You'll see. Una vez yo empiezo a digitalizar todos estos tapes, and you get to hear these Puerto Ricans that they have no idea of English, están el cool J escrachándolo, y ellos ahí.
The funniest thing, real quickly before we end, is when I travel the world, and I go to Germany and Bulgaria and Japan and this, that, and the other, these motherfuckers, and I say that with a loving heart, know more about our culture than they do.
Eso está bien loco, ¿verdad?
Because they love it so much.
That's right, man. That's right.
No puede hablar inglés, pero can tell you LL song
everything
word for word. Yeah, you know, man. A Grandmaster Caz's rhyme word for word. Y aparte de eso, don't know other, no more English. You know what I mean? And it's so crazy. You know, Joe Conzo. And it is just so crazy. And it's just amazing. It is amazing how from the humble beginnings of here in the Bronx, it has gone worldwide.
That's right. Worldwide.
But our narrative as Latinos, as, you know, Puerto Ricans, have to keep that narrative alive and document it, because we were there. We were there from the beginning.
We co-created this, man. Para no quitarle el crédito a nadie.
We were there.
Tú sabes, es como que it needs to be stated. Even taught in schools, tú sabes, porque eventually, I don't know if I told you this, once I'm done with this, I'm trying to take it from 73, which is the beginning of it in El Bronx, to 2019. Again, I started in the Bronx, pero once I'm done with this pre-historic aspect,
right.
yo voy a llegar a los 80 en Puerto Rico y entonces empiezo a decirte lo que estaba pasando en Puerto Rico, beautiful, and then I bring you to that 1985 party y por ahí sigo. Pero once I'm done with this, I'm going to try to llevarlo, make a, to the Department of Education so we can make curriculums out of this para que se enseñe en las escuelas as Puerto Rican history. It is hip hop, of course it is hip hop, pero yo les quiero, yo, I wanna bring them para que los chamaquitos, particularmente de los caseríos y los barrios aquí, when they hear again Bad Bunny and they hear, yo les voy a decir, okay, you like this music, let me bring you back to the story behind
and
all
that's what, and that's what my dad does at Hostos. He goes, you love this so much, but this is where it started, and this is how it happened. This is what Tito did. This is what Mario Balso did, and you know,
Manico, when you tell this to them, it blows their mind. Ellos dicen, yo no sabía. Yo, of course, porque the industry will not educate you. It will entertain you, and it's not the same. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Tú sabes. So we bring in that element of hip-hop as well, the knowledge, lo que hace el Zulu, tú sabes, para... That, this is why we believe la producción de Boceto, that we are an alternative education program para lo que no están haciendo aquí en la educación, porque tú sabes, capitalism, they don't like us to ellos no quieren que uno aprenda para, ellos quieren que tú sepas de matemática para hacerle las trampas para ellos, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Que aprenda, pero no es para nosotros, no es para que uno aprenda a crecer ni a ser better human beings with each other, this, that, and the other, you know, so anyway, Joe, listen, man.
Gracias, this was fun.
Thank you very much.
Hablar con Joey es también entrar en la discusión de si los puertorriqueños son meros invitados en el hip hop. Se habla con frecuencia de que esta cultura es una evolución de la cultura afroamericana, y por lo tanto en su narrativa solo se incluye al puertorriqueño como parte de los latinos que han participado del hip hop y no como sus co-creadores. De hecho, en estos días Fat Joe estaba entrevistando a Spike Lee, quien bastante encolerizado estaba tratando de comunicar que la cultura del hip hop fue creada por negros y puertorriqueños del Bronx. Así que, aprovechando la coyuntura, en los siguientes capítulos me quiero detener a explorar esto antes de continuar. Para colaboraciones, o si según vayas escuchando los episodios, conoces de alguien o algo que puede enriquecer la investigación, escríbeme en confianza a bocetos.pr@gmail.com. Recuerda que también me encuentras en Instagram como bocetos.pr. Si crees que más personas deben escuchar esta historia, comparte el episodio en tus redes o en tus chats y recuerda dejarme tu reseña en iTunes. Gracias nuevamente por regalarme un ratito de tu tiempo y visitar mi salón de clases. Hablamos pronto. Chequeamos.